Welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham, and we're just, well, pottering about in association with OldFootballShirts.com. Well, it's been a strange week here on Planet Albion. We found ourselves in the hat for the fourth and fifth rounds of the FA Cup. No thanks to Jason Steele, but also thanks to Jason Steele as we scrape through on penalties at Newport on Sunday. And then on Wednesday night, a decent performance at Man City saw us come away with nothing. That sounds a bit familiar, doesn't it? After Phil Foden's strike gave the Citizens the points. We now travel to Leeds for today's game, nervously looking over our shoulders after Fulham picked up another point at Spurs. The one bright spot of the week has been the performances of Percy Tau, who after 2 years of hype might actually turn out to be quite good at football. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back the one and only Mr. Ian Harty. Lovely to see you. Lovely to have you back. First of all, how are you? How have you been? How's your lockdown?
Lockdown's been challenging. I've been lucky in the way, you know, obviously that I'm still working every day. But for people that don't know what I do, I'm a funeral director. So it's been challenging times in this lockdown and this pandemic. But we seem to be moving forward. I think people are finally getting it after lots and lots of people weren't getting that we've got to put our masks on, we have to lock down, we have to socially isolate. Fingers crossed, 2020, they'll be talking about 2020 in 100 years' time. But
it's a lost year.
Yeah, you know, and that's it myself. You know, I've been on a bit of a journey myself. I've made no secret of it on North Stand Chat and other places. I basically had to, last March, I hit rock bottom and I basically had to go and sort myself out. And it was probably the best thing I've ever done. But it is a long road back and there's been some collateral damage on the way, but we're getting there.
Well, you talked about, before we came on air, you talked about, you asked actually to mention, you know, that you were going to sort of chronicle the sort of the things that have happened to you. Now, obviously, things like Albion, the community and the NHS generally do talk about men sort of saying, you know, if there's issues, you need to talk about them. If, you know, you shouldn't be alone and what have you. And you said specifically you wanted to mention them and air to them. Ian, so go for it.
It's just, yes. You know,
that's your story, mate.
I've always been a bit full on. You know, that can go down well with some people. It doesn't go down well with other people. I've worked hard and I've really reached a point in my life where I felt I had everything, but I had nothing. And that would, people who actually know me would think that was very strange because I had a loving family and everything, and through various acts or incidents, I almost had this self-destruct button and was pressing that on a regular basis. I really, bizarrely, I thought I'd hit rock bottom in 2018, but I was actually on a ledge then, sort of still muddled on for a couple of years, and then really hit rock bottom last March. But when I did, you reach out to people, and two of the people that I really think that needs, I've had so much support from everywhere, but Paul Camelin and Warren Aspinall. Even though Paul Camelin realised something was up when I'd written something bad about Graham Potter and we were actually having an argument when I was fueled up with Corona. The popular lager from Mexico, funnily enough.
Corona, I think
it would have been easier for me to have had the virus. I just think I did reach a point. I had to go away to sort myself out. Sadly, my relationship of nearly 30 years went by the wayside as a result of my actions. But my children have been very supportive. The people who I met in the facility where I went to, which the Albion Help or Paul and Warren helped me find, were very, very supportive. And, I felt coming out of it, I learned things about myself I didn't know or I didn't realise. And coming out of it, I aspire to try and be a better person. But it is a phrase, and it is, people think it's only a phrase. You know, it's okay to be not okay. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to ask for help. And I think that anybody that feels that they need help, then they do need help and they need to ask. Yeah. And
what was the catalyst for you to seek that help, Harty?
I was obviously the breakup of my relationship and the collateral damage with that, and whilst I was still functioning in my profession and doing it, dare I say it, very well, there were times when the dark clouds descended. And like many people before me, I thought the answer was at the bottom of a Corona bottle, and it isn't. One was too many and 16 was never enough. And, and then you become, as they say in AA, you become powerless. So, that was the catalyst. And there was an incident. I don't really want to sort of dissect the end of my marriage on here, but things happened and I realized enough was enough and I had to go and get help.
So with the help that you are seeking and the professional help that you say you're getting, and here we are now in January, so 10 months after the kind of the stuff really hit the fan, are you still walking? Are you still on that journey through the dark lands? Are you coming out the other side? Whereabouts are you now?
I'm positive, even just under a month in the place where I went made me realise, that my glass is, pardon the pun, half full rather than half empty. And you've got to concentrate on the positives. I'll be honest with you, AA is not for me, because whilst I went over 290 days without having a drink, sadly, a very good friend of mine passed away, and I had a Budweiser and toasted him. I had one beer with my Christmas dinner, and I had a couple of beers New Year's Eve, but I haven't had a drink since. So I don't see myself in that. But they're very good organisation and very, very helpful. But no, the dark clouds have gone and I've got a life that I've got lots to be positive about, and you have to concentrate on the positives and look at trying to help other people. One of the things that I am doing that I'm really finding it's a bit difficult in lockdown. Prior to lockdown, I was doing it. That I'm mentoring a couple of youngsters who've had issues themselves. And we were going for coffee and discussing how the week had gone. And we're now doing that via phones and texts. But I'm finding that very, very rewarding, that someone is a couple of blocks behind you on the path that you trod. And if you can actually get them to take, another road, then it's very, very rewarding.
So in the great scheme of things, Ian, what's, I mean, obviously this is a show that's listened to almost exclusively by Brighton and Hove Albion fans. Yeah. So that's the kind of the market you've got here.
Yeah.
But obviously it's going to be sort of 80% male here. So that's the people that you're talking to here. What's your message based on your experience? What's your message to anyone who, has hit the dark lands, who has that
sense of loneliness? No one is immune to this. it is not, you know, depression and other issues are not means tested, you know, and we're all very, very fragile in our own way. And, you know, and all this stiff upper lip rubbish, you know, so if you are not feeling 100%, go and get help. I mean, one of the things that was really, and I was really pleased that my she's not my ex-wife yet, but my estranged wife and my daughter were very quick to eradicate. Back in July, I moved into a flat, and for the first time in 56 years, I lived on my own. And I never realised what loneliness was. And it was only when the October lockdown came that they both said, look, come back. It's a big house. No one's going to get in the way of each other, but we all eat together. My daughter's persuaded me to do Veganuary, which I'm enjoying. And I've lost 5 pounds this week.
You're really pushing it now, Hearty. Come on.
I'm doing Veganuary, and I'm enjoying it. And
Surely some mistake.
I just think loneliness. So if what I would say this, specifically now, if you're looking at your contacts on your phone and you know you've got friends that are on their own during this time, please just give them a call, if only for a couple of minutes, hopefully more, but just please keep in contact with people. When you are there on your own in the four walls of a flat, you never know how important those phone calls are.
Yeah, and I should just reiterate this point as well, because obviously in this times that we're going through, and I've been doing, we do a lot of shows external to this, and I've been speaking to a lot of them. And in a lot of those recently, we've been talking a lot about mental health issues. And for a lot of people, I mean, to some people from the outside looking in, football is just... A sport, but it's more than that. It's not just 22 blokes kicking a bag of air about a bit of grass every Saturday afternoon. It's a sense of a community coming together. And, you know, we've often said going to the football is a brilliant day out, ruined by 90 minutes of football normally watching the Albion. But it's, you know, it's quite often, it's the only time that people get out of the house, or they see their friends, or get a break from their family, or a break from a job or whatever. And when you have the lockdown and you take that away, and, you know, these people, they've lost their outside link, their link to society, to, for want of a better phrase. And it's, you know, it's good to talk to people and to say...
What did we say in the fanzine once? Football is their sex.
Well, it's also that, and again, it's something you said once upon a time when you were on the show previously, Hearty, was, you know, it was football's your first love. I mean, for all the fact, you know, the love of life that might wander into your life, football was first. And, you know, it's your first mistress, or your first man, or whatever it might be.
It's your first love, your lover and your mistress. And
but it's not also, sometimes it's also unrequited, you know, sometimes.
And you can't change her.
No.
You can't change her. This is the thing. And, you know, however bad things are going at the moment, you cannot change what is happening. We only won once at home in the league, but we will still support the Albion.
Absolutely.
Through thick and thin.
Okay, well, speaking about changes, Graham Potter only didn't make as many changes as we were expecting in the FA Cup at Newport this weekend. We did get through, as I said in the intro, no thanks to Jason Steele, but thanks to Jason Steele.
I thought it was actually quite a good game, actually. I mean, considering, you know, we did to Newport, largely did to Newport what Man City did to us. We bossed possession, we kept, you know, we kept... things moving, you know. All right, we gave them a little sniff here and there, but it's the only difference, obviously, being is we didn't score until bang on 90 minutes. But apart from that, you know, it's for every bit of criticism that anyone wants to level at Potter about the Newport game, it seems to be the same level of praise that they're heaping for the Man City game. So, I mean, yeah, it's you're half expecting that slip, that sort of misplaced header for the goal to go in. But at least, you know, with the Newport game, we did it after it happened after we scored rather than before we scored. Because, you know, who knows what was going to happen. But I guess you want to talk about through the game first. But, you know, I really do want to wax lyrical about those penalty saves because that was something else.
Yeah, but still...
did you not think, you know, that at the end of the penalty shootout, you thought that's 2.5 hours of my life I'm never going to get back?
No, I thought I was okay with it. I mean, you know, it's the blood and it's the crash and thunder of the FA Cup third round. We have been the Newport County before, playing other sides, and you want to sort of, you know, put in a good performance against them. So, you know, they'll credit themselves of keeping us at bay till for 90 minutes, but it is also down to our appalling shooting and, incidentally, a very good performance from their goalkeeper. You know, that game could have easily ended up 6-2.
But I mean, was the state of the pitch a leveler a little bit, do you think?
Yeah, but I mean, was having no fans there also a leveler in our favour? You know, you had 5,500 screaming Welshmen there, you know, on a Sunday night, would it have been really intimidating for us?
That's an interesting point, you know, well worth making. I mean, the only difference is, thankfully, that there seems to be a with Dean type distance between the goal and the stand at I was going to say Somerton Park, at Rodney Parade. So,
yeah
I've seen worse, you know.
Well, Newport have got a terrific record against Premier League or higher division sides anyway in the cup, but they knocked Leicester out a couple of years ago. They took Spurs to a replay. You know, they're no slouches there, and they're doing terrifically well in the league as well for a side of their stature. And you know, it was never going to be an easy game, and you know, it took us a while. I mean Tom King, their goalkeeper, he was having a bit of a personal battle with Lewis Dunk, it seemed, for quite some time.
Well, let's put it this way, Aidan. We could have been Leeds United that weekend. So, you know, let's not sort of like worry about it too much.
No. But it was, I mean, were you surprised, Harty, by the strength of the side that we put out in this game? Bearing in mind we had a game at Man City a couple of days later.
Yeah, but nothing surprises me with his team selections, Aidan. I just think, you know, we'll obviously come on to that sort of more generally. I just think he tinker, you know, they call him the old tinker man, don't they? And he does change things around. Yes, it was a stronger side than I thought he was going to put out. But I don't know. It's just, it's extremely frustrating at the moment for everybody. And the issue is that the Potter management has managed to polarise the Albion support, hasn't it?
I think if you're going to do that, then I don't think it's the Potter management. I think it's going to be if the fingers are pointed anywhere, because let's put it this way, I find it difficult to believe that the Potter management and Reed and all the other people that are with them actually go up to Neil Maupay and Leandro Trossard and Danny Welbeck and say, please kick the ball as high over the bar as you can, or please don't bother your asses to get into the box when the cross comes in, or please don't bother, you know.
Yeah, but isn't that what coaching and training sessions are about?
Absolutely. You'd like to think that management is going to deal with that, but you'd also like to think that there are professionals enough, these people are professional enough, that they shouldn't have to have that sort of rubbed down their neck from someone who, you know, whose playing career himself wasn't absolutely stellar, but obviously he is noted as a kind of a tactician. But by the same token, it's that effort has to come from within. It has to come from within. And if there are other issues at play which aren't football related, then yes, that's where management come in. But if it's down to football, then, you know, that has to be, you know, the player is coached and is good enough or isn't. And we've said it before on this show, I think that as good a coach as Potter is, I still think he's playing with substandard players in order to actually fulfil the maximum potential.
See, I think I think the answer is somewhere in the middle. Sorry, Harty. I think the manager's job is to get the best out of the players he has available. Now, Potter clearly has a plan. He's got this brilliant mind and a way of playing, which, quite frankly, when it works, is absolutely wonderful to watch. Some of the players possibly aren't quite up to scratch. He inherited this squad. He's trying to reinvigorate it to get the players in that can play the way he wants. But sometimes I think that he does. I think I agree with you, Hearty. I think he does tinker a little bit too much for my liking sometimes. I mean, largely it's the defense, but that stays. He picks the same defense mostly, pretty much every game. But it's Eve Bissouma gets picked pretty much every game. After that, it's pretty much a free for all. I think there should be a little bit more consistency. I understand the horses for courses side of it. I think that's fine. But I mean, if players generally want to know they're playing every week, and it does. I think he's doing a good job. I think he's getting the best out of the players he's got. But I think he does need to have a more consistent side.
Go on, Ian.
Aidan, Alan, substandard. You've said that, Alan. I actually think this is the best squad of players the club has ever had.
I fully agree, but I don't think it's the right players for the manager.
No, so therefore, if we got the best squad of players, we roughly know what our strongest 11 is, allowing for injuries.
Mm-hmm.
We should be really keeping to as close to that week in, week out. Why do we make so much about worrying about the opposition and changing the way we play? We should make the opposition worry about us.
Well, I think at present, what you've got is you've got sort of a lot of games, that, especially around Christmas, that are sort of, we're playing Tuesday, Saturday, Monday, Thursday, Tuesday. So, you know, if it was just a straight Saturday, 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 I think there'll be a lot more consistency. So, and fitness is an issue. We've got sort of like half a first team choice that's out. As for changing it around, you know, all right, he had to in the midfield. I mean, McAllister stepped up for Man City game where Bissouma would have played, and not necessarily McAllister starting. AD's right. It's largely that the back five are the same. The difference being, I think, for the Man City game is Bernardo starting instead of March at left wing back. And you can understand that. He just played 120 minutes against Newport. So you get that point. So for the most part, I'd say that one or two changes are tinkered at most. The rest are usually enforced.
The thing is, if Jurgen Klopp does it, it's called rotation. If Graham Potter does it, it's called tinkering. I mean, I can see there's an argument and a logic to both sides of this.
Because at the moment, we've got Ben White is playing in midfield. Now, irrespective of whether you think he should be in midfield or not,
I don't.
He is in midfield. It means that Dan Byrne is going to be playing at the centre-back. So that's another sort of change that you've got there. So do you go back to... I mean, let's put it this way. Goalkeeper, because a goalkeeper, that counts as a change. You've got Dunk and Webster, who are, you know, first-team guaranteed. Mm. And when fit, March would have started, but for the fact he'd done 120 minutes. It would probably be Lamptey, but Veltman has to play. Ben White's filling in for Lallana / Bissouma. So, you know, at the moment, but it's answering a point that you made actually the other day, AD, about so-and-so is a midfielder, so-and-so is a right back. So-and-so. We have that flexibility within the club that each player does get to play in different places. We had El Azati playing at right back once upon a time. It's not his strongest position, but he was playing there. And so there is that sort of fluidity within the side that he's got the wherewithal to be able to do that.
Well, you know, if we go out this weekend to Leeds and put on, and I mean, we all know that Leeds are going to throw the kitchen sink at us, so we just need to throw a bath back at them.
And, but the other thing is, there will be changes from that game. You know, again, Man City.
Oh yeah, but soon we will come back.
But you've got to go for a game like Leeds and the Fulham game. All right, Manchester City to a degree is one of these free hits that we talk about with the big six. Where we don't, you know, it is crisis time now. We don't expect anything off the big six, and it is a bonus. But we have to get 4 points.
Yes, we do.
From the next couple of games.
Okay. All right then, Hearty. Gun to head. Yeah. What is your starting 11? What do you think is our best 11? If everyone's fit.
If everyone's fit. You've thrown it at me now, but you know, I'd go with Maupay and Welbeck up front.
Okay.
The back three, I'd go with White, Webster and Dunk.
Okay.
March and Lamptey on either flank.
Yeah.
Then Lallana, Bissouma and possibly Gross.
Okay.
Is that close to your best 11?
No.
It's not far off it.
Well, it's pretty much it. It is pretty much there, to be honest. But I mean, this is where it's interchangeable. Basically, the issue is, this is going into the Leeds game this weekend as well. We know what Leeds are going to do, for instance. So they're all about, they're not, they leave the back door open. So we want pace in that side so we can count, so we, to counteract that. So basically, attack is our best form of defence. So we want pace in that side.
You'd be picking Connolly.
If he was fit, yeah, maybe,
it,
yeah.
We were saying he's fit, but yeah, yeah, you'd yeah. Be picking
Connolly. I was having this discussion with someone earlier in the week, and we were talking about empty stadiums and how it benefits some players more, and having a crowd there benefits players in a different way. Noor Morpai is a player that needs a crowd. He's a wind-up merchant. He loves getting under the skin of the opposition.
That's a fair point, actually.
And he you know, without his best performance post-lockdown was probably that game against Arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, very little. But he got under the skin of Guendouzi, and Guendouzi never played for Arsenal again. He's that sort of player. So I think that Neil needs a crowd, frankly. And there's other players that have benefited, like Adam Webster, who was a target for the Boo Boys last season. He's benefited from not having a crowd, and he's probably been our best defender this season, actually, I think. But
Think it's Lewis Dunk, but you know, yeah, Webster has cut out. But then, to be honest, a lot of them are cut out those stupid mistakes. So,
Hearty?
Do you think it aids Graham Potter that we haven't got 30,000 people in the crowd, in the ground?
I don't think it does, because I think for instance, the Man United game at home where the ref gave him a penalty after the final whistle. The final whistle would have gone after Solly March equalised in that game, which it should have done anyway.
Yeah.
But with 30,000 people in the crowd, they wouldn't have played for the extra 5 minutes, which they did, which allowed United to get that penalty after the final whistle.
And also think of Morpay's winner against Arsenal. You think how limbs that would have been, and how much those players would have loved jumping. Well, they'd have got a yellow card, but jumping into the crowd to celebrate a really, really good win. Or even
how would the Sheffield United game have gone down?
One of two ways, isn't it? Absolutely, but it's one of two ways, isn't it? I mean, I think most
the
people.
The Southampton game.
Well, the Southampton game was, I think, was kind of we had a mitigating circumstance. We had a bad penalty given against us again. But I'm thinking of a Liverpool game. I think that, you know, encouraged by the first half performance. All right, missed the penalty, missed the sitter, but encouraged by it. You know, these players are getting lifted. I think actually, weirdly enough, I think they miss us. Potter would miss us against the top sides, but less so where there's a greater level of expectations against the lower sides.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's a very good point. Okay, I mean, what about your 11 then? I mean, you said is it similar to Hearty's?
Yeah, I would go largely with Hearty's one. It seems to be the most solid one. Although I would say that Lallana and Bissouma, so long as they're not both playing defensive midfielder, but it a lot of things are going down the middle there. The only person I would consider replacing would be Pascal Gross, just because of his relative lack of mobility, even though he can pick a pass. Davy Prupper's back. So I've got no problem with playing him. And I think that Alexis McAllister had an excellent game against Man City. And if that's the level he can play at, I've got no problem with playing him. So it's, you know, it's basically Hearty's 11, but with that sort of one question mark over the supposedly, quote, creative midfield player.
Okay, we're going to come on. Sorry, Hearty, go on,
Ian.
With the tinkering, we've not seen enough of McAllister, have we?
No, because...
this is the problem.
Yeah.
You know, I would love to, you know, after his equaliser against Crystal Palace, I thought, here we go. But then he just disappeared again.
He was ill.
Was he?
He got COVID and he was ill for a while. It took him a while to recover and he had a slight knock. So there is mitigating circumstances for that. So, but yeah, largely I agree with you. If he was fit and well, then he'd need to be in the side.
I think McAllister's taken a little bit of time to adjust, but when he plays well, he plays really well. But it's just, you know, it's still a learning curve for him. I mean, he's still only, what, 23? He's, you know, it is still a culture he's getting used to. He's not played in front of a crowd in England. I mean, that's something he might end up being quite nervous about.
He played at the Bombonera. He's not going to be nervous about that at all.
That's a good point, well made, actually. Yeah.
He's an RG. He won't care, will he?
Yeah. Okay, well, we've got to move on, which basically means I don't get to talk about, like, Jason Steele's new contract after that performance, which I'm still... I mean, it's the equivalent of me, of, like, him getting a new contract after that performance. He's the equivalent of me being asked to take over from Mark Chapman on Match of the Day. So it's like...
No, don't even go down that road. But, however, no, I mean... If we're going to talk about that, just before we do Shirt of the Week, yeah, it was a howler. We all know it was a howler. He recognised it as a howler. He owned his mistake. Fair play to him. I mean, he can be magnanimous afterwards because he was a hero in the penalty shootout.
It wasn't the only mistake in that game, Al. That's the thing. Yeah. He got away with a couple as well.
Well, so... yeah, but, you know, he wasn't the only one, so...
No, true.
So, yeah, when it comes to that penalty shootout, I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. Four, not just sort of like easy saves, he sprung at them. I thought they were absolutely astonishing, each and every one. You had the Newport manager saying it was off his line. No, he wasn't. It was that good. Hearty, have you seen anything like it?
No, it's, you know, I'm not a big fan of penalty shootouts because I've seen England lose more than they've won, so...
Well, every now and then, you could peer over the sofa, Hearty.
Looking through the fingers is like having Doctor Who and the Daleks on in the 70s. Look, it is a penalty competition. He did very well, but as you point out, Al, we were having the penalty competition because of him.
Yes.
I mean, he came out for that final cross like Christopher Reeve, didn't he? All he was missing was a cape.
Yeah, no,
I mean,
it just wasn't, you know, look, it was a night, we've gone into the hat for the next round, we've got a winnable tie in the fourth round, possibly a winnable tie in the fifth round. Personally, I'd like Brighton to get out the FA Cup, the sooner the better, because, you know, 1983, papered over a lot of cracks, and we went down. We cannot go down this season.
What did happen to the cup money, Hearty?
I don't know. and we probably never will know.
Probably never will know.
On that note, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. This show is brought to you as ever in association with BrilliantOldFootballShirts.com. Over 110,000 shirts on there now for you of all shapes and sizes. And colours, and even for the colourblind. Hearty, can you have a go at describing this particular thing for me?
Well, I'm going to go back to the summer of '86, where Queen did a stadium tour, backed up by Status Quo, and if they'd done a gig at Carrow Road, this is what Freddie Mercury would have worn. This is, it's sort of Harlequin within the yellow and green. It is something that only Freddie would have got away with, to be fair.
So I'm thinking it looks like a jockey shirt.
It does look like a jockey shirt. That's a very, very good point. Who's it made by, Al?
It's made by Deodora. The badge itself, I think Phil's had a go at the photoshopping for, because it seems to be a kind of a black hand with the kind of finger pointing upwards and the thumb pointing out. So it's not Northern Soul because that's a clenched fist.
Which is almost like a signal of going up to the next life.
It is, or picking your nose.
I can remember leaving a church many years ago and this guy was pointing to the sky and I thought there was something up with the roof, but he was actually pointing because where the person was going in the next life.
Well, what it really is it's a badge with the fist of the Albion 83 foam glove of the finger pointing at the time was Kenny Everett's thing. The sponsor
another
is
friend of Freddie's.
It's far too obvious to say it's Norwich City, so I'm going to say well, the badge just says it isn't Norwich City unless Phil's mucking about. So I'm going to say, well, for starters, it's not a first team shirt because he never gives us first team shirts. So I'm going to say something from France.
That is incorrect. This is, and there, obviously there's a massive Albion link to this as well, actually, this week. This is the 2005 to 2006 home shirt of Mamelodi Sundowns from the South African Premiership. The side was formed in 1970, and they currently have two stadiums. They have the 28,900 capacity Lucas Masterpieces Molipe Stadium and the somewhat larger 51,762 capacity Loftus Versfield Stadium, which they occasionally use when demand requires it. Mamelodi Sundowns are owned by the South African mining billionaire Patrice Motsepe, and he took a controlling stake in 2019. He is the brother-in-law of the South African president, Matalema Cyril Ramaphosa. The team goes by the official nickname of the Brazilians after the colour of their kit, but they're also known as the Bafana Ba style and the Massana Malwana.
Now you're making this up, aren't you?
I probably am. they are the most successful side in South Africa. They've won 13 league titles and 12 cup competitions. In 2016, they were knocked out of the preliminary rounds of the CAF Champions League, but were reinstated when the Congolese side Vita were disqualified for fielding an ineligible player. Sundowns went on to win the trophy, beating Zamalek of Egypt 3-1 on aggregate in the final, the first South African side to win the tournament. Mamelodi are proud of a handful of players who've moved on to the bright lights of European football. Bongani Zungu is currently playing for Rangers on loan from Amiens, and Kigo Lorenzo Doli plays for Montpellier in League Two. But then, of course, there's Percy Tau. There's Percy Tau, guys. And he's played a very good role in both of these games this week. And I've been really impressed with him.
Yeah, I was really worried before Newport that he'd have this heavy expectation, you know, and he was the great hope of the Albion moving forward in these difficult times. But he hasn't disappointed so far. I think we have to give him a little bit of time. But, you know, keep it going, Percy.
Absolutely. He actually reminds me a little bit of Tariq Lamptey, but without admittedly the defensive duties. But you're just going to see, well, the day that Lamptey and Tau play on the same side, you're just going to see this blur, aren't you?
One of them were playing on the right.
They'd both be playing on the right. Tau's been playing on the right. I'll tell you what I do find funny, and talking about level of expectations, is reading the South African fans' reports and considerations of the Man City game. And it's on a different level. It's off the scale, how they approach the game, because they have a real major downer on Leandro Trossard, because he wouldn't pass the ball to Percy Tau. Every time Trossard got the ball, they were screaming at him to pass it to Tau. And there was some real hate stuff on South African social media.
We don't need that, do we? Come on.
No, we don't, but it's just think this is different level stuff. This is off the, you know, stuff we haven't seen before. I mean, it's one thing if Trossard doesn't pass full stop, but the fact is that every time he got the ball, refused to pass to him. That was kind of bizarre, that was. But no, I'm
you imagine when we go back to normality and we have a number of Percy Tau's South African fans make it over here and come to a game.
It'd be brilliant.
You know, it's going
to
be amazing.
Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. I mean, the colour and the humour which they've added to our timeline of late, and plenty of other Albion timelines as well. It's been absolutely a joy. It's been joyful, actually.
Yeah.
It's been a little like ray of sunshine in the darkness here, and it's like
something positive, which is good.
And you know, I mean, and you're right, Harty. I mean, he does come because it's taken 2 years to get over the line, and that. Obviously, him parked and the changes to the regulations, meaning we could get him here now. And it's, you know, and you're right, he does need time to settle in. But from those performances he's put in so far, he's shown no fear. He's shown
an enthusiasm for it, certainly.
Yeah. And you know what? Unlike the bloke who falls over a lot at Snake Mountain up the road, he plays with a smile on his face. And that's infectious.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. Look,
absolutely.
Work in progress, they say.
It is a work in progress, certainly.
But the other player I wanted to talk about, who also played a major starring role in this game, and we did touch on him a little bit earlier. I mean, we're talking about the Man City game now, was Alexis McAllister. And he's certainly, some of the passing he showed against Manchester City was absolutely wonderful. Yeah, and if we can actually have someone who can get on the end of that, someone with pace, it could be a real big weapon.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't think we've seen enough of him. You've explained, you know, the issues surrounding that. Let's just hope that he can stay injury free and he gets, a sustained run in the team.
But we've also got the Polish lad to come in as well.
Impressed by Zakiri actually as well. I mean, that's still an option to go for. we talked about it on last week's show, admittedly, but he covered himself in glory in the first 10 seconds of the second half against Wolves. So, you know, there's something, I mean, the weird thing is that up front, could you actually name your right combination? We've got Tau, we've got Welbeck, we've got Trossard, we've got Mopay, we've got Zakiri. You know, which of those five do you pick? I mean, in your 11, Ian, you said about Trossard and Mopay. Okay, fine. Welbeck and Mopay. Okay, fine.
Welbeck and Mopay, yeah.
Every year at the beginning of the season, we do our pre-season predictions, and one of those predictions is how many players do we think are going to break through from the academy this season, and against Man City this week, we had another one make his Premier League debut in Kedra, and that's another one a forward to add to the mix.
As your forward off for crying out loud.
You know, but that's good, but that's positive, and. Again, I'm going back to this polarisation of the support and, you know, especially on North Stand Chat and We Are Brighton and you know, stuff like that. And it's nothing personal against Graham Potter. And I'm sure that, you know, the we just want to see the team doing well. And we are underperforming. There's no way of dressing it up. I just hope that we get the rub of the green and things can move forward effectively. We are looking at 17th place now, aren't we? You know, if we get that, we'll be safe. And I still think we'll get it with the lowest points for a team to remain in the Premier League.
I disagree, Harty. I think we are going to turn the corner from the turn of the year. I think that the amount, if we weren't creating the chances that we are, I would agree with you, but we're creating these chances. And it just takes someone to get on the end of them and actually start converting these ones. And then we are going to absolutely muller someone in this season, I think. And
someone's going to get battered 1-0 by us, aren't they?
Absolutely. Well, I would take that because I mean the clean sheet. But all it's
right.
Like,
all right, Adi, where do you, I mean, I worked it out this afternoon. I can see five wins this season now that, you know, I can confidently think we can get five wins. A lot of people think we need seven. If we are going to turn the corner, I think we should beat, if we want to stay up, we should beat Fulham, Palace, Newcastle, Sheffield United and West Brom. Where else do you... What other teams can you see us...
I don't fear the
Arsenal,
top six anymore.
Spurs, Man United, all of those.
No, I don't fear the top six anymore. I mean, we may not get wins out of them, but I think we'll pick up a point where previously we were expecting none and keeping the scoreboard ticking over. So, yeah.
Do you think we're going to stay up now?
Yeah. Yeah. Where the goals are coming from, I don't know. But once they do come, then you know, it's a habit. You know, drawing games, losing games is a habit. Once they start scoring, you know, there's a high probability that'll start becoming a habit. They'll know how to do it. I mean, even against, I mean, I'll give you an example against Manchester City, you know, and City, either they really flagged or, as Guardiola put it, we absolutely battered them for the last 10, 15 minutes. There was a chance where Mopay could have stuck his foot out and dinked it over the keeper, lobbed it over the keeper. Instead, he let the ball fall. And he, you know, and he was tackled with his chance. You know, a player with the confidence to actually do that would have done that. And I've seen it far too often. And I think that your point earlier, Adi, about Mopay needing an audience, I think is absolutely right. You know, he would have, he there's a better chance he'd have actually had the confidence to take that shot on and taken that dink. But you see this bloke, his body language is someone whose nerves are shot to pieces. I hope it's not the case. The bloke keeps going. Good for him. But, you know, I like to think that, you know, once he gets one, as we used to sing on the North Stand, when you get one, you get more.
Yeah. But the other thing is, you know, it's something it's a mantra we use a lot on this show. But if you don't buy a ticket, you're not going to win the lottery. If you don't shoot,
you
don't score.
That's not a mantra, score. Mate. That's a cliche.
Yeah. But if you don't shoot, I am cliche-y after all. Well, but if you don't shoot, you don't score.
Right. Come on, boys. Let's just flip it around then.
Go on, then.
Will you be worried if we don't beat Fulham?
No, because we're not going to get relegated in February.
Oh, no. You know,
It gives us undue pressure. But, I mean, it'd be nice to go into mid-March and not actually be looking over our shoulder all the time. Or even at the end of March, you think, okay, we're going to be safe. So if we get the points as soon as possible, then great. But, you know, in recorded history, no one's been relegated in February, even Fulham.
But Harty, I mean, and the other thing is, I mean, I'm taking heart. There's an awful lot from the performance. If you're not scoring, you're not. But I mean, I've seen this. We should have got something against Liverpool. We should have got something against Man United.
We should have got something against Sheffield United.
We should have got something in that game. But the performance is against the top side.
I mean, this is going to cost me, AD, because Harty Jr. has followed you two and got this ridiculous facial hair. And so we've got this bet.
Thanks,
now.
Mate.
We've got this bet that if Brighton go down, the beard's got to come off for 12 months. But if Brighton stay up, I've got to put a grand behind the bar in Benidorm at his stag weekend, and I hardly drink now.
Talking of which, there's a high probability, as we all get older and all get smellier and greyer and wrinklier and what have you, there's a few Brighton fans that haven't actually heard of Ian Hart. Now, it just occurs to me that next month, in fact, it's only about 3 weeks' time, is the 24th anniversary of Fans United. Now, Ian Hart is one of those who, alongside many others, played a major part in those war years. Certainly the first Albion battle, which was trying to get rid of Archer and Bellotti from the midst of the Albion. We had several more battles afterwards. But from a historical perspective, Ian, and you're going to have to blow your trumpet here because no one else is going to do it for you.
Tell us
what you did back in the day.
Look, we edited the fanzine from 88 to 1997.
And this fanzine was called?
The fanzine was called Gull's Eye. It evolved from there, and we took in Beezer, which was, you were a big part of our, mm-hmm. the Brighton Independent Supporters Association. Gull's Eye, I'm not saying Gull's Eye would have come to an end, but the troubles in 95 almost galvanised us for a sort of finale for this great battle that we had, and I do, you know, and now you remind me, I remember the lads that we've lost, lads and lasses, mm-hmm. dear Sarah Watts and Paul Welsh and Roy Shooter and Ed Basford, mm. and people that all worked in the battle to save the club. Everybody did their bit. I do wonder if it. And I did think this the other day, so, you know, how would the battle be fought with social media now? Would it be more intense? Would it be fiercer?
That's an interesting point, isn't it? Because especially for those that were there. I mean, you can't, because those who weren't there, those who only know social media won't necessarily be able to get the sort of the compare and contrast. Now,
in order to answer that,
just tell us how Gull's Eye came about and how it was that you actually got people together in there, you know, when it came to a march or a protest or this is the information. So give us the historical background of. Well,
Gull's Eye was a fanzine. We started in August 88 and it evolved from there. And then I think Beezer was about 92, I believe, Alan.
I think it was 92? Something like that. We asked.
Yeah, it was after the playoff season. It was that season that poor old Barry was, you know, had to do another fire sale.
Yeah.
And, you know, Barry got a lot of flack from fans, you know, and I'd see when Graham Potter's getting flack. You know, Barry got flack, and a lot of it wasn't down to him. You know, he was only acting under orders. I know that was a familiar defence in Nuremberg in 1945. But you can't. There's one for the teenagers. But you can't. It was a battle. So we had the fanzine. You know, for example, we had the meeting before the York City game, where we knew that the it was actually going to be at the end of the first half. The pitch invasion was supposed to be at the end of the first half.
Yeah.
So we were. So it were, went in the halftime break of grandstand. So it was breaking news. And then I think a couple of people overdid it in the Hove Park tavern, and the first available opportunity, it was on. And like with his little boy, the little boy with his finger in the dike, you know, once the water started flowing, that was it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, the yeah. flooding certainly happened. I stayed on. I was going to say, to use your metaphor here, I stayed on the dike, but I really not shouldn't be staying that. But yeah, I mean, it was that whole thing. So when it comes to the social media thing, and like I say, in those days it was whispers and it was stuff like
yeah,
that.
I mean, but yeah, I mean, social media things now, we would have had Archer's address, Stanley's address, Bellotti's address, mobile phone numbers, email addresses. You just could have really ramped it up so much more.
You think it'd be a bit more toxic, do you reckon?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, but
definitely.
I mean, Hearty. So, I mean, I obviously that is one thing, but you also look at what's happening now. With, I mean, obviously we've just drawn Blackpool in the next round of the cup, and it would have been lovely to like hook up with those guys again because you know, I mean, they've gone through exactly the same thing, and they've had. The likes
they did
of
this
media.
In the social media era, didn't they?
It was,
but then it's got extremely toxic. Extremely toxic.
And we're seeing it going on with Bury now. We've got things going on with Wigan now. We've got things going on with all sorts of clubs. And you know, this is all in the social media age. So, I think
Blackpool is a very good parallel to draw there. You know, because again, an intransigent owner, an obnoxious and abusive one at that, who didn't care despite all his protestations. So I think that's a really good parallel to draw. There's, I think, possibly your answer, Hearty, that in the social media age.
Yeah. I mean, people forget Simon Valder went to prison.
Yes.
Because of a message that he left on Bellotti's answer phone. He went to prison. You now fast forward, she did it, and she was an adult. My daughter entered the world of reality TV, and ITV had to call the police in because she had a death threat when she was in Love Island, and a kid threatened to cut her head off and gouge her eyes out.
This is Amy,
and
of course.
No further action was taken, you know, but Simon Valder went to prison for threatening Bellotti on his answer machine.
So we have moved
in different ways, which we shouldn't do.
Again, you raise a fair point, and which, you know... I wouldn't know how to answer that for you, Hearty, but yeah, it's bizarre the nature of the way that actually and just the way that society has gone generally, and we're not going to get into any sort of ramifications or arguments, but let's face it, there is this kind of polarized society on many, many levels when it comes to your politics, to your social considerations, sometimes now, unfortunately, to the colour of your skin, which is raising its head again. And there is sort of like this level of freedom of speech that has no concept of responsibility. And again, I was talking about this with Attila last week. We don't believe in free speech if it comes with no responsibility. And as someone who ran a fanzine, Ian, you fought for that yourself, didn't you?
Yeah, we ended up in the High Court in 1990. You know, as John said, it was a sledgehammer to crack a nut.
Yeah.
They basically wrote to our employers back in 1990, sent them copies of the fanzine, and I won a constructive dismissal claim, but my employers back then were a big funeral group, and they effectively got me out of the door because sent in copies of the fanzine, and they didn't want someone like that working for them. Writing things like that in his spare time.
You know, it took sort of like, you know, fundraising gigs to help you out. And again, that was the kernel of the kind of the kernel of the fans movement at the Albion was not so much that there was a political movement to be had, but you know, that this sledgehammer to crack a nut, the fact that the club, and it was the club, and not individuals, it was the club attacking the fans.
Yeah.
In a way that you actually can't, irrespective of what you think of how distant, how remote the directors of the club are now, you can't imagine that happening. You'd at least think there would be some kind of dialogue before this sledgehammer comes at you.
But and the weirdest thing is, obviously, Dudley is no longer with us, but, you know, I had met them all afterwards on social occasions, you know, and I'm friends with John Campbell on Facebook. It's all very amicable, and it could have been avoided even back then. Mm. And it's just so silly. And, you know, as I said at the start, life is too short and you have to concentrate on the positives.
What it did do is it lit the blue touch paper for what was to follow throughout the rest of the 90s with the Albion. You know, like, yeah. I say, the BISA was formed. You know, what it did for the first time is it got us together in a way that I don't think had ever happened before.
You know, it was just all could have been averted. But when I look back on the battles that we had, it was great to make friends that I probably wouldn't have made had it not been for the battles. It brought a lot of us, you know, together, and John and yourself and Paul Samra, and, you know, lifelong friends now. And sadly, some of us are no longer with us. And that is very, very sad, because
we know what we did. I mean, we can pat us. I think that. And I don't necessarily include myself to that extent, because, you know, I still consider myself as just one of the foot soldiers. I mean, there is
But it was like World War II. It was like conscription in World War II. People did it in this country. Young people went and fought on the battlefields of Europe because they had to, right? Mm, and we had to do that, or else we wouldn't have a football club now.
Correct.
Right? So we don't need a pat on the back. We had to do it. So we've got 30,000 people in the ground now, subject to COVID, obviously.
Yes.
Well, that's absolutely right. And it is something that we're all immensely proud of, the fact that we did fight to save our club, and we still have a club. And we're the poster child for what can be achieved. Because look, we're in the Premier League at the moment. We've got no divine right to be there. But we're there.
And we've done it on the back of our own efforts, and that's what we should be proud of.
Back in 97, that seemed like that seemed impossible, and it's amazing that we got there. And Harty, thank you for your part in that as well.
Thank everybody for that. But everybody played their part. It's like, well, I don't like them when they attack the Johnny Come Latelys on North Stand Chat. Everybody's gone to this football club. There's been one day where they've gone to this football club for the first time. That doesn't make them any lesser a fan, does it? Whether you've been going 40 years or 4 days.
We did lose a generation as well, and they're coming back. And now the fact that the stadium is full every week
up, a lot of those new fans will be drinking on me in Benidorm, so that's good, isn't it? Could I just say one more thing, please, Amy, before we go? Please, again, just to touch on something we touched on earlier, get on your phone. If you've got a mate who's living alone, give him a call, please.
And so thank you, of course, to Ian Hart. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been Aidy Packham. This is the Albion Raw in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Been on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com on DAB and our podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
When you're down and troubled, and you need a helping hand, and nothing is going right, close your eyes and think of me, and soon I will be there to brighten even your darkest night. You just call up my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running. Oh yeah, babe, to see you again. Winter, spring, summer, or fall. fall. Now all you got to do is call, and I'll be there, yeah, yeah, yeah. You've got a friend. If the sky above you should turn dark and full of clouds, and that old north wind should begin to blow, keep your head together and call my name out loud now. Soon I'll be knocking upon your door. You just call up my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running. Oh, yes, I will see you again. Winter, spring, summer, all you got to do is call, and I'll be there, yeah, yeah, yeah. Hey, ain't it good to know that you've got a friend? When people can be so cold, they'll hurt you and desert you. Will it take your soul if you let them? Oh, yeah, but don't you let them. You just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running to see you again. Oh, baby, winter, spring, summer, or fall. Hey, now all you've got to do is call. Lord, I'll be there, yes, I will. You've got a friend. You've got a friend, yeah. Ain't it good to know you've got a friend? Ain't it good to know you've got a friend? Oh, yeah, yeah, you've got a friend.